The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
One of the things that sort of seemed to be a theme in the run-up to the election campaign kicking off was that the country was bleak, that Ireland was being overtaken by immigration, that it wasn't generally a great place to live. And particularly on social media, you had words like failed state being thrown around. Seems, though, that the election result is not necessarily representative of that view, because people voted in a way that seemed very different to that mood music. Former Ambassador Dan Mulhall has joined me in studio. Now, Dan, you've been saying online that people aren't taking note of a lot of the positives about Ireland. Are there any in particular, or is it across the board?
Across the board. Social media seems to me to be a weed garden at the moment, full of sort of negativity about Ireland. And it's actually become worse in many ways since the election, because some of these people who are trumpeting the notion that the government would be wiped out by an angry public discovered to their chagrin that that didn't happen, and that in fact look like we'll have the same government back again, essentially, with maybe some different third party partner for the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil government. So I think the sort of disappointment in certain quarters on X and other social media platforms is such that people are now saying, oh, you know, the people were duped, they were, you know, they were bought out, they were, you know, they were fooled by the media and so forth. So I see a kind of a narrative developing, and I've seen this movie before. I was in America, obviously, for 6 years, and I saw the kind of the way in which social media sort of infected the public square with all sorts of mad ideas. And I see those same issues now being trotted out on social media. Obviously, they haven't yet reached the broader public, but I'm just saying that if you let this kind of thing grow and fester, you end up, affecting the way in which ordinary people see the world. And I think Ireland is in a much better place than some of these people on social media give us credit for.
Can I ask about that parallel? Because if you look at the states over the past while, there are very significant endemic issues. There are issues to do with the provision of healthcare and the relative cost versus the outcomes they get. There is massive opioid problems across the country. There are massive issues to do with homelessness and destitution in a lot of their major cities. Now, a lot of what was done online managed to give people false causes for those problems, but the problems were there nonetheless. Is there an element of the same in Ireland? That yes, it may be overblown and there may be a race to blame the wrong groups, but we do have record numbers of people who are in emergency accommodation. We do have nearly record numbers of people who are sleeping rough, and we do have a layer of the populace who have an experience of poverty, which is extraordinary in a country that is as rich as we are.
And I don't deny any of those things. I fully accept that we have a problem, particularly with housing. And remember, we are a property-owning democracy, for good or ill. Other countries do it differently. In Germany, I knew people of my kind of level in society in Germany who never wanted to own their own home. In Ireland, there's a kind of a sense that we need to own our own home. And therefore, when people find themselves frustrated in that regard, they feel as if their life's ambitions have been demolished. And that's a very bad thing. So I think the incoming government should make a really big effort to try and increase, to boost the supply of housing and to try to maybe make our housing a bit more affordable for people. Because if we allow a generation to develop which feels that they've been excluded from that Irish dream of owning their own home, I think then we're sowing the seeds of trouble for ourselves for the future.
But why then do you think that it is overblown? Because surely it is those who feel disenfranchised who makes the most noise.
Well, what I see are things like we're being colonised by people coming in from outside, that we're being replaced. I mean, ask yourself the question, is there any example in the history of the world where the population of a country has been replaced? The answer is no. Even with conquests, right? Even when the Germanic tribes invaded the Roman Empire, the native people of Europe remained the native people of Europe, and the incomers were a relatively small number, and eventually they were assimilated. So this is a nonsense idea. There's also the idea that that young people are fleeing the country because they're almost being driven out of Ireland because they can't afford housing. I've been to Australia in the last year. My wife's Australian. And I've met Irish people there, and they don't show any signs of having, you know, a miserable existence, you know, banished from their native land. I'm not saying there aren't people, by the way, who have felt a need to leave. But when I was in London, I helped to set up the London Irish LGBT network. And I can tell you, those people, when they left Ireland 20, 30, 40 years ago, they were driven out of Ireland by intolerance, right? I also met the survivors of the Magdalen laundries when I was in London. And they were people who were driven out of Ireland. But people who go, the young Irish you meet in London today, they're likely to be working for the biggest companies in Britain. They're not there because they have not been able to get a decent job in Ireland. They're there because they want the experience of living abroad. I have family members living in Australia. I think most of them will come back because they'll be drawn home by family and the fact that now it is possible to have a decent career in Ireland, even if you're a person of, you know, very high achieving individual. You can find jobs in Ireland that will satisfy your needs.
On both sides of those, on the immigration side and the immigration side, let me just ask you in response of what I suspect some may think. On the, where you say that there has never been a situation where a populace has been effectively driven, I'm sure some of the Native Americans might argue, but let's not go that far back.
Yeah, that's and also the Aboriginals in Australia, yes. That is true.
But if we go to modern history, which is what I think you're referring to, it tends to be, I think, a straw man for cultural change. So if you look at a city like Miami now in America, its prime language in large areas of the city is Spanish. Many would see this as a good thing in being multicultural, but I suspect there's a vote there that says, this is not our city. This, we no longer have cultural preeminence. Is there any truth in that in the Irish setting? Do you think that there are towns or villages around where people are feeling it is changing and I don't like it?
I'm sure there are. Look, we are a country which has almost no experience of immigration until the last, say, 20 years. It's really only since the enlargement of the European Union that we ended up having an influx of people coming into Ireland. I mean, the Ireland I grew up in the 60s and 70s, was essentially, we had a tiny, I mean, you wouldn't see anybody without a white face unless you were hanging around somewhere near the College of Surgeons in Dublin, or maybe Trinity College, where you had foreign students. But essentially, we were a completely monoracial country. We're no longer that. But I don't see anything particularly damaging or to be worried about in that situation. I mean, we're still, by the way, predominantly. I mean, if you, I like,
yes,
I recently.
White Catholic, largely.
I mean, we're largely still a white population. I mean, the actual non-white population is still relatively small. It may grow, who knows. But the demographic changes in Ireland have come about because of our success. When I was growing up in Ireland in the 60s and 70s, nobody wanted to come to Ireland because there were no jobs. I mean, look, I can remember a time. The street where I lived in a terraced house, you know, a three-bedroom terraced house, council estate, and a council house. And around the corner from me, there was a street where I remember walking to my grandmother's house, and there would be women, there were four or five houses where women were sitting there looking out over the half door with shawls on. This is in Waterford in the 1960s, right? I remember on the street corner beside my house, there would be 15, 20 men hanging around, unemployed, right? You don't see that anymore. So what I'm saying is that we have made huge progress, but we can do a lot better. And obviously we now have the resources to make Ireland into a better country than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. It is a better country. It can be better again. I particularly think we need to deal with the issue of housing, to make housing more plentifully available so that people don't feel that they're being excluded from the Irish dream. I do think also that we have to kind of wake up to the fact that we're now an attractive country for people to migrate to, and we have to tighten up our procedures and make sure that we're not taken advantage of. And, you know, there was a time when nobody would have come to Ireland looking for asylum. Now they do. And we have to treat these people fairly. But at the same time, we should be able to process their applications and to decide who's a genuine asylum seeker and who's not.
Okay, if your thesis is correct and we are better than we allow ourselves to recognise that we are, is there any way to solve that so the discourse matches the reality? Because surely our system, the way our political system works and the way it interacts with both traditional and new media, precludes us getting to reality. If you're an opposition politician, you don't win by saying things are pretty much all right, it's going well.
Yes, I mean, I do think, and that's why I'm staying on X. A lot of people have abandoned X and moved to Blue Sky. I have a Blue Sky account as well, but I'm still on X, even though I get a lot of grief now from the negative merchants who constantly are after me whenever I say anything positive about Ireland. This is what I'm really getting at, is that there's a kind of a discourse out there, especially on a platform like X. These people are mainly anonymous. They have small followings, but they're vitriolic in their hatred for what they see as an Ireland that has disappointed them. And I'm just saying that if you compare us internationally, for example, the United Nations Human Development Index, which is probably the best comparative judgment of countries, we're number 7 in the world on that list, right? I saw a list recently of STEM, knowledge of STEM on the part of young people. We're number 11 in the world. You know, we're number 4 in Europe. So, you know, comparatively speaking, we're doing very well. People seem to assume that there's a kind of a gold standard, that there are sort of ideal states where people, where things work perfectly, and we just can't manage that. No, they're not. I mean, people talk about Australia. I've been in Australia, and it's a wonderful country to live in. It's got wonderful climate. It's got great outdoors. I really love the country. My wife's Australian, as I said. But the same problems, when I talk to people in Australia, they talk about the cost of housing. They talk about the availability of housing. It's to say, and they talk about, you know, the health service. I mean, you go to Britain, you know, you hear people complain bitterly about the National Health Service, which, you know, is certainly more advanced than what we have here. We don't have a National Health Service. In Germany, people complain about the National Health Service, even though when I was in Germany, I thought it was Rolls-Royce, or I should say probably BMW or Audi, but anyway, or Mercedes-Benz. But it was a fantastic health service. But German people complained about it because it wasn't as good as what it was in years gone by. So there is a certain nostalgia for a bygone era. And remember, Brexit and Trump are both nostalgia projects. They both look back to a bygone era when things were better.
But does that mean that it is a lost cause? Because both Brexit and Trump started their rise during the early days of social media when there was at least some application of a break. If you look just, I think it was either today or yesterday, Elon Musk tweeted that homelessness is a misnomer and that it hides the reality that, quotes, these people are drug addicts, violent criminals and people with major mental health problems. To which the answer is, yes, Elon, that's the reason why you need to give help, not the reason that you need to castigate. But if the person who has the largest influence on one of the largest social media platforms can behave like that, what hope of a reasoned discourse?
Yeah, but we have to preserve the ambition to keep the public square a place where you can have a reasoned discussion. And that's why I engage with people on X. I go back at them, I try to point things out. Eventually, they start to become abusive and then I block them because I don't want to spend my time. I don't have enormous time to spend, but I'm willing to make the argument to people who are willing to actually listen to the argument. And I still believe that the Irish people are essentially decent and fundamentally knowledgeable and they know that some of these outlandish things are simply not valid. And, you know, I wrote a piece for the Irish News there a few weeks ago in which I said, in Britain and America, in both countries, there was a kind of an economic Shangri-La within the memory of many people. You know, the Rust Belt in America, they remembered when, you know, they had the factories and they had industries that have gone away because of economic developments. The same is true in Britain. You know, the Brexit vote was essentially in the north of England where people felt economic decline had struck them. The difference with Ireland is that we don't have that phenomenon because most Irish people, at least over a certain age, remember a time when Ireland was much less fortunate than it is today. So there's no kind of recent memory of an economic Shangri-La that people are trying to get back to, you know, make America great again. I mean, make Ireland great again, what, go back to the 1950s when, you know, there was mass immigration and high unemployment and so forth. So I think the realities of life in Ireland simply defy the efforts of those to portray Ireland as a sewer, as a hellhole, or whatever. Now, there are still people out there trying to do it, and what I'm saying is that we need to be careful about this. We need to make sure that there are people out there putting forward alternative viewpoints, pointing to the facts that not that we're an ideal, wonderful, perfect place. We're not like Mary Poppins. We're not practically perfect in every way, but we're a country that has made good progress, needs to go further, but can do so. But if we start to talk ourselves into a kind of a fit of depression about our country, that's not going to do any good for anyone.
Can I ask you one final thing? And this relates to you mentioning the new US administration. As a former ambassador, how do we balance moral obligations with economic obligations? Our relationship with Saudi Arabia, the Department of Foreign Affairs touts the kind of trade that we have with Saudi, and some might say that is not necessarily something to be proud of. Likewise, we have an administration coming in where we know it is led by somebody who has multiple felony convictions against. Do we just abandon all of that and say economic necessity, we just go out and play nice?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for us really is that our view of the world is quite different from the view that Donald Trump and his circle would have. And in particular, let's give one example, for example, the Middle East, where we tend to have a position that's, I think, rightly sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinians. That is not something that's shared widely within the Republican Party. In the Democrat Party, it's different, but in the Republican Party, there tends to be a sort of a full-on support for Israel. So there will come a time when we will have to decide, are we going to take a particular position with regard to the Middle East, Israel, Palestine, or are we going to trim our sails because we don't want to attract negative attention from the United States? It's going to be a quandary for our policymakers. And I'm not saying that we should abandon everything we believe in, but I think we do have to take on board the fact that the world has changed and that there's a new reality, and we can't ignore that reality, and we have to find a way of accommodating our particular view of the world to the reality that America is still our most important economic partner, certainly, and will be for the foreseeable future. So we've got to try and... It's a difficult balance to strike, and I hope we can do it. I believe we can.
Dan Mulhall, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.